yesterday we got a little bit of a look at the Gemara, small amount of the Rishonim in terms of just trying to explain the basic possible scenarios. We saw really a potential for a lot of fascinating things from the sugya. And ultimately, what we know is that we have this din that if you have somebody who surrounds his neighbor, first of all, he surrounds him with his property, then he actively surrounds him with a fence. If you take the view of most of the Rishonim, the fence is on the outer perimeter of the property. So then, if it's only on three sides, so the surroundee, who we've been calling Shimon, is not responsible for anything. But if there's a fourth wall added, so then he becomes chayev for everything. And by everything, we mean half of everything, presumably. He's chayev to partner in everything, in all the walls. So the main question we have to turn to now is, why is that? And so if he did not build those first three walls, so why is he obligated to share in their costs? And what is particularly challenging about this sugya, among other things, is that there are a lot of candidates. You look at the Rishonim, and you look at another sugya in Shas, which references this Gemara, and you're aware of other sugyas in general, and hopefully after this morning and tomorrow morning, you'll have a broader familiarity with some other discussions throughout the Babylonian Talmud about related ideas. So you'll see there are a number of candidates and we don't even know how they relate to each other. So from what you've seen so far, what can you put on the table here as possible obligating factors? Right, what do we know about what might be the relevant issue here that makes the beneficiary obligated? Yeah, Yaron?
Some sense of hana or protection that presumably most people would want.
Okay, so here you're saying some sense of hana.
Or like another reason for some sense of protection.
Okay.
I don't know if it would fall under the same.
So why would you want to distinguish between the two? What would the hana be if not that?
Privacy, I don't know, just being protected, more, I guess, secluded from the outside world.
Okay, just to sharpen it, you're saying there are two different components of your sentence. So whether it's privacy or protection, that we see a little bit of a dispute here, that most of the Rishonim seem to understand it's about protection. And the truth is, the Gemara probably supports that with the Runya and Ravina story, that it's about protection. And by telling that story about how, listen, you got to worry about, the Gemara probably supports it both from that and from just bringing in the guard. Right? The idea of the guard as some minimal representation of the expense really sounds like the issue is protection. So that would probably be the most likely guess. There are some indications that it's about Hezekiah, particularly in terms of Rashi's take that the fence is in between them, in between the two neighbors. But it's reasonable to say it's about protection. But still, that just explains the background, but as far as a halachic concept that would create a liability, create a responsibility. So what is that? So you mentioned hana. Right? So when you're using that word, you're also invoking a concept in Dinei Mamonos. Right? The idea of nene. Right? The idea that somebody who benefits from the actions of others or the property of others could theoretically find himself responsible to pay for that. So what details do you know? What else can you fill in for this picture from what you've seen, from what you've seen from Rishonim, from other Gemaras? What else do we know about Nene so far? Are there other sugyas that might be related or that might be different? What other terms might come up here? Yeah, your own?
Maybe whether the benefit is tangible versus intangible. Meaning, if the benefit is actually something done to your property or to something physical, you may be more liable to pay or to cover that cost than if it's, let's say, something you can't really put your fingers on. It's more of a, more of like a chesed, I guess you could say.
Okay, so the definition of what constitutes hana What constitutes a quantifiable hana that we could actually hold somebody responsible to pay for? That's something that's going to need some definition, right? Because hana is very vague and very could be very ephemeral. So we mentioned yesterday that if I paint my house in a nice way and you enjoy looking at it as you walk down the street, so it's difficult for me to say that I should be able to charge you for that. I remember when I was a kid once reading a children's book about a very wise Japanese judge. And I don't know the origin of all these stories, but I'm a little suspicious because one of the stories about his wisdom was about two women who came to him both claiming to be the mother of the same baby. And he came up with this brilliant idea to cut the baby in half. So I'm a little suspicious about the origins of some of the stories. So maybe this story is also a Gemara somewhere, or a Pasuk somewhere. But the story, one of the other stories that I remember, I read these books as a kid, the other story that I remember is that there once was a baker who overheard a conversation outside of his bakery. And he heard two poor people talking to each other. And one was saying to the other, he says, you know, I've got nothing, I can't afford any luxuries, I can't afford any delicacies, but the one real joy I have every morning is that I get to walk past this bakery or whatever, I'm in the proximity of this bakery, and he bakes the fresh bread every day, and it smells so wonderful. When I get to smell that bread, that really gives me reason for going on, that really inspires me. So the baker overheard this. He said, that's not fair. He's enjoying the smell of my bread without paying for it. So I'm going to sue him. I'm going to take him to court to make him pay me. So he went before this wise Japanese judge, and he said that this man has been stealing from me. He's been stealing the aroma of the bread that I have been baking, and he's not paying for it. And I demand that he should pay me. So the judge listens. And the audience is all sympathetic. Whoever's in the court is all sympathetic. This poor beggar doesn't have anything, and the one joy he gets in life is smelling the bread, and now this baker wants him to pay for it, so everyone's sympathy is with the beggar. And then to their surprise, the judge says to the beggar, he says, you know, the baker, he's got a good point. Tell me, I know you don't have a lot, but what do you have? And the beggar says, I have maybe two coins. So the judge said, okay, take out those two coins. And everyone is shocked. They can't believe that this is really where the judge is going. So the guy takes out the two coins, and then the judge says, okay, now put them back in your pocket. And he said that basically his ruling is that since the baker wanted compensation for his bread, but it wasn't actually the bread itself, it was just the smell of the bread, so therefore his compensation would be the sound of the coins clinking. That would be how he would get paid. So that was his wise judgment. So whether that is a pasuk somewhere or something, but it does highlight that it's hard to know where you draw the line. Somebody's nene from you, so it's possible that they could be nene in a very ephemeral way. And where do you start saying that it's reasonable to start making other people responsible? So that's why the sugya of Zenene Vizelo Chaser becomes very, very important. And we know that it's a related sugya because, as you saw, the Gemara in Bava Kamma invokes our Gemara in that context, which is something that perplexes some of the later Svarim, as we'll see, not because that's unreasonable, but because there are Rishonim who seem to look to other premises. So it seems like, even though our Gemara here does not identify what is the issue, what is the reason, but the Gemara in Bava Kamma seems like it pretty much identifies it. And that Gemara is pretty important because that discussion, which you saw yesterday already, of Zenene Vizel Chaser, so it sounds like that Gemara is telling us what this Gemara is about. Right? That there the Gemara talks about that whole overall question of where does it become significant? Somebody else is benefiting from you. At what point should you be able to hold them responsible to pay for that kind of benefit? And on the other side, at what point is it they're smelling the aroma of the bread, which doesn't really seem like it should rank as something you can charge for? So where do you draw that line? So the Gemara invoking the concept of chisaron, it's very relevant, not just because it makes more sense that I should pay someone if they lose out somehow, but it's also that that helps to define when the hana is something substantial. That when it's a real zenen of zelo chaser, somebody benefits from me and it has no impact on my life whatsoever. And so then it might be like the smelling the bread or walking past the nice painting on your house. You know, that if there's no chisaron to the other party, it's not just that, well, there's nothing he needs to be compensated for. It also says something about the nature of hana, that the hana that doesn't have any kind of a trade-off to it, that doesn't have any kind of an impact on the other side, is by its very nature a less significant hana. And it becomes harder to say that this rises to the level of what we should be able to charge for. So you understand what I'm trying to highlight here, that the existence of some kind of chisaron, of there being some kind of a disruption, that it has some impact on the other party, is relevant not just because maybe that party deserves compensation, but also because it helps to identify that the hana is significant, not just the chisar. And part of where that will make a difference is because we're not looking at it, like I mentioned yesterday, it's not about an avera, right? It's not about that the chisarin is somehow a unjust, illegitimate impinging on the other party. It's just about how that defines what's going on. So one major difference is, if we were to assess what would be the cost of this hana, so where are we measuring it from? Are we measuring it from the chisaron, the impact that it has on the other party, as if it was some kind of nezikin idea? That the same way, if I break your stuff, I have to compensate you for the value of what I broke. So is that what's going on here also? That I am paying you for the chisaron? Or, as we'll see, it's actually more likely the other way around. That no, I'm paying for the hana, and the price will be calibrated based on the hana. But until there's a chisaron, the hana doesn't get measured. Until there is something that makes it a genuine hana, defined by the fact that it has some trade-off, some impact in the world, so then we don't start evaluating it. But once there is a little bit of that, so then it becomes a measurable hana. And that could be a big difference. Are we measuring the chisaron or measuring the hezek? Measuring the chisaron or measuring the hana? Those might be completely different numbers. And in fact, the chisaron might not be measurable at all. So it could be like the Gemara in Bava Kamma invokes in the context of our Gemara, the fact that the fence was more than it otherwise would have had to be because I'm there. Right. So in other words, again, it's not any kind of an avera that the beneficiary is doing by existing and forcing this guy to have to move around him. But it undermines what he might otherwise claim, which is, listen, you need to build a fence around your house, so I automatically happen to benefit from your issues. So to that he says, no, but they're your issues also, because it's your presence that made this a more expensive fence. So what we'll see, if we have time to explore more of the whole topic of Zendena Vizela Chaser, Zendena Vizela Chaser, that the nature of the chisaron could be very variable. Right? It could be like a more traditional kind of sale where you're benefiting from taking away an object from me, so that's the obvious kind of chisaron. I no longer have the inventory. I no longer have the property that you take. That's the most basic kind of clear hana chisaron relationship. Or if I work for you, so I had to spend my time working for you, which I can't spend on something else. And so those are situations where there is an obvious kind of chisaron. But as we could see, the chisronos might be a little bit less obvious. So there might be an opportunity cost. So, for example, if you look at the broader picture of the sugya in Bava Kamma. So, yes, it's a question if somebody should sleep in my guest house without permission, whether I can charge him afterwards. But if it's Kaima L'Agra, if I have a hotel, and this person snuck into the hotel room for the night, so then that's a whole different story, because there it's a commodity. People normally pay for this. And we identify that as a quantifiable hana. And not just because maybe somebody else would have come to that room that night, but because it's a commodity and not getting the payment even from this person is itself a chisaron. And maybe we'll get a chance to talk about also, time permitting, but Zenen of Azelo Chaser may actually be one of the premises, one of the bases for intellectual property rights. Right, this is something that is a major discussion in the Achronim. The whole question of where in Halacha do we find the structure to protect intellectual property. And this happens to connect to what we talked about a few weeks ago, the whole question of the status of Acherim. So in some generations, there was a Acherim issued against somebody who would reprint the writings of another author without his permission, or sell the Svarim of somebody else that he just copied without the permission, which is a type of intellectual property protection. So there was a debate about that. Well, we say from the fact that they need to make a Acherim, that shows you that there was nothing wrong with it until then. And as we noted in the context of eavesdropping and privacy violations, that's not necessarily conclusive, that it's very possible that a Acherim is issued even when something is already wrong, but just maybe a little bit less obvious. So there's a lot of literature, there are actually many full volumes devoted to this, which is particularly fascinating also because it's not an explicit sugya in earlier literature, but in the contemporary literature, there are a number of full volumes on this topic. It didn't even have a name in the time of the Gemara, but what's now called Zechuyos Hayotrim, the rights of creators, intellectual property rights. So what exactly is the premise in Halacha to protect intellectual property? So one of the possible sources, the Tshuva of the Noda Behuda and others, is that the sugya of Zendene Vezelo Chaser is the source for it. Because if somebody wants to take your writings and distribute them without your permission or your involvement, so yes, he's not actually taking a physical object from you. So he might think, okay, so what's the big deal? Zenana, he's enjoying it, and you still have everything you had before. But you don't, because you don't have the same ability to compete or to produce and to market that would have existed beforehand. So that is a chisaron. So it's a different kind of chisaron than you find in other contexts. But it also calls attention to this idea that the whole sugya of Zenden of Zelo Chaser is, it's not just about defining where the chisaron is and how to assess that, but it also tells us about the nature of the hana. And that in this case, so that case of the publishing, that Adibishu was talking about a specific case, we can go into the details later if you'd like, but that the whole interrelationship of these two phrases, Zenden Nevezel Ochaser, Zenden Nevezel Ochaser, is that, yes, okay, maybe there's a certain amount of legitimacy to benefit from somebody when there's absolutely no negative impact on him. But when there is some kind of a negative impact, even if it's the kind of things that wouldn't count in the Parsha of Nezikin, so then that defines it as a Hana, which could either be, now to come at it from two different directions, could either be something you could charge for or expect compensation for, or, to go back to our Hezek Ri'ah language, something that you can prevent. And say that, no, you have no right to sell copies of my book without my involvement, because it's Zenene V'Zechaser. It creates a problem for me. And again, I'm emphasizing that in the Parsha of Nezikin, this would not necessarily consider actionable hezek, because it's a gromo, right? We discussed, if I stop you from making money, so that is not necessarily something that you can sue me for in Bezdin, because that's a gromo, and it's very hard to establish that you would have necessarily made that money. But here, the standard is very different. So to qualify as a chisara, and the fact that you can't sell your book the way you'd want to, because I'm selling it for free. So that doesn't have to qualify as an Ezekin to be a chisar. It's a different standard. So even though it's indirect and causational, but it very possibly does qualify as this kind of a lack, this kind of a cost to the other party that should prevent me from being able to do this. Now, I don't want to oversimplify the sugya of intellectual property, and there are those who would go to other sources, and others are those who would call it a form of gazel or the like. I think there are other concepts that are relevant too, but just to hanogei l'inyaneinu, what's relevant to the sugya, that becomes something that's very interesting.
Does everyone agree that that's considered a chisara?
Well, it's a literature. I don't want to speak on behalf of everyone.
Like,
sorry.
Is there any specific case in the Gemara like that where it calls it?
Not as obviously. We are going to get into sugyas, God willing, in Bava Basra about competition and its impact. It comes from a more direct business kind of model. So we'll see. We'll have a little more to say about that. So I don't want to speak on behalf of everyone. But it is a significant position that really does play an important role in that intellectual property discussion, even though there are many who look to other sources. So what are the implications of looking to other sources? If you're interested, if anyone wants to pursue writing about this, there is extensive contemporary literature about it. It could give you hundreds of pages to read about that tshuva and about its implications. So I certainly wouldn't want to say everyone agrees, but it is a major part of the... happens to be that we read that tshuva about from the Emek HaMishpat about eavesdropping, you recall. That same author has a separate, bigger volume on intellectual property rights, and he would have a lot to write about that topic. So essentially, we know that Nene is one of the major candidates here, and we have to figure out exactly how that plays out. But there's also another sugya, which the Rishonim invoke here. And it was one of the earlier sources today, so hopefully you got a chance to see. It's a Gemara in Bava Metzia. All right, what am I talking about? The sugya of Yore. Now, just like Makif and Ikaf and other things, so Yore also is too brief of identification, because there are other sugyas that also start with that word, and that you have to know where you're holding. So when we get to the second parak, actually, yored is means the opposite. Yored is something that is negative in the second parak. It means a yored luminus chavero. That is unjust competition. That if you descend into somebody else's field, meaning his professional field, and his job, in a way that hurts him, ruinous competition, that's also called yored. This is a positive yored. This is Yore the Nifte Chavero, that somebody decides to wander into somebody else's property and fix it up and enhance it. So to what extent are you responsible to pay somebody who does this for you? So if somebody decides he's going to come in, you have your crop and you haven't planted yet, you have your field, and somebody says, oh, here's a good profit opportunity for me. I'll go into this guy's field and I'll develop it and I'll send him a bill. So when are you chayiv for that? And under what circumstances are you chayiv for that? When Rudy Giuliani first became mayor of New York City in a very, very different climate, so he... one of the first things that he did to stop the increase in crime was to focus on what was called broken windows theory, was to focus on more minor crimes and recognizing that they had a ripple effect into bigger things. So he cracked down on what seemed like very minor offenses. So one of them, at the time, they used to be what they called the squeegee men, that people would come in front of your car and they would start washing your windows, and they want to charge you for washing your windows. So are you chayav for that? And so if somebody decides they're going to clean your car and you didn't ask them to, so you have to pay them? So this is the sugya of Yored, which some of the Rishonim invoke as to the basis for this. That if we find that under some circumstances somebody can do work on your behalf and then send you a bill. So is that what's going on here? This guy decided, I'm going to build a fence. You probably want a fence too. So I'm going to build a fence around our shared property and I'll send you a bill. Is that what's going on? And if so, how do we reconcile that some of the Rishonim do invoke Yored as the issue, when the Gemara in Bava Kamma seems to say pretty clearly that Nene is the issue? And that this Gemara is an example of Zen Nene v'Zechaser, and that's the whole story. So we'll have to explore these in much more detail tomorrow. I'll just put one other phrase into your consciousness, which over the course of the sources you'll get to see also, and hopefully certainly by tomorrow you'll have much more familiarity with. But there's also the notion of Mavriach Ari. What does that mean? Are you familiar? You saw that term? Yeah, Shmuel?
I think it means like chasing away the lion, like you're, but what it like is supposed, is that you're not benefiting someone, you're getting rid of something negative.
Okay, right, exactly. So where does that come into the story? And is that different? And so if somebody, the Gemara discusses, if somebody decides to pay off somebody else's debts, or if somebody does an action to prevent some kind of a problem, literally, as I said, chasing away a lion, let's say you see, it's quite impressive if you're able to do that, but you see a lion eating somebody's animals, maybe, or eating somebody's crops, and you chase away the lion, so can you charge for that? Well, it sounds like not on the surface, though it's machloks in the Gemara a little bit. And what we'll also try to explore tomorrow is that absolute? Is the line really like that? That it's based on positive versus negative things? That if I enhance your field, I can charge you for that, but if I chase away a problem, I can't? Is that really what's driving it? Or is there some other aspect of Mavriach Ari that makes things a little harder? Because, for example, the Gemara and the Rishonim discuss, maybe the issue is that the person can claim he didn't care. He wouldn't have taken care of this problem. So why should I pay you for taking care of a problem I wouldn't have bothered with? And I'm sorry that you extended yourself, but it's not something I was planning on taking care of. So to what extent is that a viable claim? So all of these are things that we're going to have to explore more tomorrow in much greater detail. So just what's on our radar screen for tomorrow, and please we'll try to see as many of the sources as we can from today to help us have as strong a background as we can. So we want to understand the parameters of Nene, the parameters of Yorid L'Nechse Chavero, where exactly Mavriach Ari comes in, how does it make a difference, how does it impact things. That's a sham. We got a lot to explore. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful Yom Shalom, a great Tuesday, and God willing, see you soon.